Primary appraisal is effective, not cognitive, exploring a revised transactional model of stress and coping. The traditional view of stress appraisal, as originally proposed by Lazarus and Folkman, holds that when individuals encounter potentially challenging or threatening situations, they engage in an initial primary appraisal that evaluates whether the situation poses harm, benefit, or irrelevance to their well-being. Historically, this appraisal has been viewed as a deliberate, cognitive judgment, a mental act of interpreting and labeling stimuli based on logic, previous experience, and conscious thought. However, Stefan and Anderson, 2025, argue in their recent synthesis of neuroscience literature that this foundational assumption is flawed. Their updated framework proposes that the first process through which humans interpret the relevance of a stimulus is not cognitive at all, it is affective. Affect, in this context, refers to the body's immediate emotional reaction to environmental stimuli, occurring below the level of conscious thought. It involves neurophysiological processes that generate sensations of pleasantness or unpleasantness, as well as arousal or quiescence, often before a person is consciously aware that something is happening. These affective responses are initiated in subcortical brain structures such as the amygdala, insula, and brainstem nuclei areas responsible for detecting and responding to threats, safety cues, and visceral states. Stefan and Anderson posit that these emotional responses constitute the true primary appraisal. The brain's evaluative machinery operates initially through interoceptive and autonomic feedback, creating a core effect that signals whether the situation is moving the body towards safety or threat, regulation or dysregulation. This reconceptualization challenges the long-standing preference in psychology and psychotherapy for prioritizing cognitive insight over embodied experience. By placing affect at the root of primary appraisal, Stefan and Anderson reposition emotion as the architecture upon which cognition is built, rather than its consequence. Our subjective experience of a situation as good, bad, or neutral emerges not through detached reflection, but through the body's ongoing interpretation of physiological shifts, heart rate, skin conductance, muscular tension, and gut sensations that occur in response to our surroundings. These shifts are evaluated implicitly and instantaneously, forming the groundwork for further cognitive elaboration. The authors also critique dualistic assumptions that treat cognition and affect as separate, hierarchically ordered systems. Dualism refers to the philosophical stance that mind and body, or thought and feeling, are distinct and operate according to different principles. This separation, traceable to thinkers such as Plato and Descartes, has been deeply ingrained in Western models of mental health, fostering the mistaken belief that rationality can function independently of emotion. Instead, Stefan and Anderson's model insists that cognition and affect are inseparable processes rooted in bodily function. Cognition does not override emotion, it contextualizes it. Thought does not precede feeling, it follows and interprets it. By centering on affect in the appraisal process, this revised model challenges the assumption that people first think and then feel. Rather, it suggests that people first feel, and only then do they think about those feelings. Emotion, not logic, is the gateway to meaning-making. This insight has profound implications for therapy, education, and stress management. It invites a shift in focus from correcting distorted thoughts to regulating dysregulated emotional states, redefining how practitioners support people in moments of challenge. What is the science? The revised appraisal model is grounded in a growing body of neuroscience research demonstrating the interdependence of emotional and cognitive processes at the level of neural architecture. The brain does not house separate systems for feeling and thinking. Instead, these functions are carried out by overlapping neural networks, where emotion and cognition constantly comodulate one another. Integrated neural circuits. Modern neuroimaging studies, particularly those using functional magnetic resonance imaging, fMRI, and magnetoencephalography, MEG, show that the brain's so-called emotional and cognitive regions are tightly integrated. The dorsolateral prefrontal cortex, often associated with rational planning and working memory, has extensive bidirectional connections with the limbic system, particularly with the amygdala, which plays a crucial role in emotional salience and threat detection. The anterior cingulate cortex, which plays a crucial role in error monitoring and decision-making, also significantly contributes to emotional regulation and pain perception. These examples demonstrate that emotion and cognition are not separate domains, but mutually influencing aspects of a unitary process. Embodied mental states. Cognition is not an abstract mental event detached from bodily function. The emerging field of embodied cognition has shown that the body actively shapes how the mind interprets information. For instance, posture, facial expression, and breathing all feed back into the brain's evaluation systems, altering mood and perception. The vagus nerve, a major component of the parasympathetic nervous system, links the brainstem to the heart, lungs, and digestive system, transmitting information about internal bodily states to the brain's affective centers. This interoceptive input forms the basis of affective experience. Thus, our mental states are embodied. They are formed, influenced, and maintained by the physiological state of the body. Core effect. At the heart of the revised theory lies the concept of core effect. Core effect refers to a continuous, ever-changing neurophysiological state that represents the body's appraisal of its internal and external environments. It is experienced as a subtle but pervasive mood or feeling tone, a sense of comfort or discomfort, safety or unease, vitality or fatigue. Core effect is not tied to specific objects or events. Rather, it provides the background against which specific emotions, such as anger or joy, emerge. It is generated by activity in the limbic system and brainstem and modulated by autonomic signals from the body. Core effect is what gives emotional color to perception, determining whether we experience a situation as promising, threatening, or inconsequential. It is this baseline attunement that constitutes the true foundation of primary appraisal in the revised model. Together, these insights dismantle the outdated belief that cognition can be neatly separated from emotion. They suggest instead that emotion undergirds every act of thought, from deciding whether a room feels safe to determining how to respond to a colleague's criticism. The way we feel before we even know we are feeling it shapes what we see, what we remember, and what we believe is possible. In turn, our thoughts feed back into our feelings, creating a recursive loop that defines the human experience. Ancient theories of mind and body. To fully appreciate the significance of the revised transactional model, it is essential to understand the conceptual lineage that shaped contemporary views of stress, emotion, and cognition. Western philosophical thought has long grappled with the relationship between mind and body, whether they are fundamentally distinct or inseparably intertwined. The early theories of Plato, Aristotle, and the Stoics laid foundational assumptions about emotion, thought, and their respective roles in human functioning. These assumptions continue to influence modern psychology, often in an implicit manner. Plato's dualism. Plato's ontology, the branch of metaphysics dealing with the nature of being, divided the human person into two substances, the incorporeal soul and the material body. The soul, according to Plato, was eternal, rational, and capable of knowledge. The body, by contrast, was transient, irrational, and prone to error. Emotions, particularly those linked to bodily appetites or passions, were viewed as distractions from rational deliberation and philosophical insight. This dualistic view laid the groundwork for centuries of thought in which reason was elevated over emotion, and in which bodily experience was treated as either morally suspect or irrelevant to true understanding. In psychology, this manifests in theories that implicitly treat emotional reactions as noise to be suppressed or filtered out, allowing rational cognition to proceed. Aristotle's dynamic view. Aristotle complicated this rigid division by proposing a more integrative account. While he still believed in a form of dualism that some parts of the soul, e.g., the rational soul, were immortal and others were embodied, he also emphasized that emotion is not purely bodily or irrational. Aristotle viewed emotions as psychosomatic phenomena, which involve both bodily perturbations, e.g., changes in heart rate, muscle tension, and mental judgments, e.g., beliefs about whether an insult is deserved. This notion anticipates modern views of emotion as cognitive-affective hybrids. He also believed that animals and humans share certain emotional capacities, especially those linked to survival, such as fear and pleasure. Aristotle's model, then, recognized that emotion and reason are not entirely separable and that both are essential to adaptive behavior. Stoic materialism. In contrast to Plato, the Stoics, especially thinkers such as Epictetus and Seneca, rejected the concept of an immaterial soul and viewed the mind as an integral part of the material body. They defined emotion as a product of irrational value judgments, which disturb the soul's natural equanimity. For the Stoics, emotions were not inevitable reactions, but faulty interpretations that could and should be corrected through reason. They categorized emotions into four basic kinds: fear, desire, distress, and delight. The goal of Stoic practice was apatheia, or freedom from these disturbances, achieved through continuous mental discipline. Though their era's physiology limited their understanding of emotion, the Stoics anticipated modern cognitive theories by recognizing the role of interpretation in emotional experience. However, unlike the revised model, they viewed emotion as something to be overcome rather than understood as foundational to appraisal and coping. These ancient theories created enduring philosophical rifts between feeling and thinking, as well as between the body and the mind. The revised transactional model challenges these divides, drawing instead from modern neuroscience to affirm that emotion is not a contamination of thought, but its necessary precondition. Modern and postmodern theories of mind and body. From the Enlightenment to postmodernism, philosophers have continued to grapple with the relationship between emotion, cognition, and embodiment. These later thinkers progressively dismantled dualism and offered increasingly integrated views of human experience, many of which resonate with contemporary affective neuroscience. Descartes dualism. René Descartes' mind-body dualism hardened the metaphysical split between spirit and matter. He claimed that the residential cogitans, thinking substance, and residential extensa, extended substance, were wholly different in kind. The mind was capable of thought, volition, and self-awareness, while the body was a mechanical apparatus governed by physical laws. Although Descartes proposed a physical interface, the pineal gland, his view essentially rendered the mind an immaterial ghost in the machine. This framework profoundly influenced the development of psychology and medicine, encouraging diagnostic categories that separated mental disorders from physical illnesses and privileging cognition over emotion in both theory and therapy. Spinoza's monism. Benedict Spinoza, a contemporary of Descartes, rejected this bifurcation. He proposed that mind and body are two attributes of a single divine substance. This radical monism reframed mental and physical events as different expressions of the same underlying reality. Spinoza argued that thoughts and emotions are not in conflict, but are coextensive. To understand one is to understand the other. His theory anticipated today's recognition that brain activity, bodily states, and subjective experience are different levels of analysis of the same biological phenomena. He also suggested that increasing one's awareness of how emotions arise from bodily states and perceptions could foster both emotional clarity and ethical behavior, views that align closely with modern therapeutic mindfulness. Kant's subjectivity. Immanuel Kant further dismantled naive objectivism by arguing that perception is never a purely passive process. Instead, all experience is structured by the subject's a priori intuition space and time and categories of understanding. The world we experience is always phenomenal, shaped by the mind's structuring activity. Importantly, Kant emphasized that bodily states contribute to how we construct and appraise these experiences. His notion of judgment as a fusion of sensation and concept resonates with the revised model's claim that affective appraisals precede and shape cognitive interpretations. Heidegger's integration. Martin Heidegger deepened this perspective by asserting that being in the world is always effectively attuned. For Heidegger, mood, Befindlichkeit, is not a secondary consequence of cognition, but the very way in which the world shows up for us. Affect is not a distraction from meaning, it is the horizon of meaning. When we are anxious, the world appears threatening. When we are curious, it appears inviting. Heidegger's phenomenology anticipated the revised model's claim that appraisal begins with a bodily sense of significance that organizes perception and response. His emphasis on lived experience and embodiment complements modern research on affective forecasting, somatic markers, and emotion-driven decision-making. Across these modern and postmodern accounts, a clear evolution is evident, moving away from dualistic separation and toward a recognition of the integrated, embodied nature of human perception and adaptation. The revised transactional model draws directly from this philosophical lineage, synthesizing it with empirical data to propose that stress appraisal begins not in the neocortex, but in the viscera, and that coping begins not in thought, but in felt sense. A revised transactional model of stress and coping. Traditional psychological models of stress and coping, such as the influential framework proposed by Lazarus and Folkman, 1984, conceptualize coping as a sequence beginning with cognitive appraisal. In that classical view, when an individual encounters a potential stressor, a stimulus perceived as threatening or demanding, they engage in a primary appraisal to determine whether the situation is relevant to their well-being and whether it represents harm, threat, or challenge. This is followed by secondary appraisal, in which the individual evaluates what resources they have to cope. However, this model assumes that individuals first think rationally about the situation and then respond emotionally based on the meaning they ascribe to it. The revised model proposed by Stefan and Anderson challenges this sequence, asserting that our bodies initiate an effective, emotion-based response before any deliberate cognitive process is engaged. According to this updated framework, when a potential stressor is encountered, the body does not wait for the brain's neocortex, the site of abstract reasoning and verbal thought, to interpret it. Instead, the stress response begins in subcortical structures such as the hypothalamus, brainstem, and amygdala, areas of the brain responsible for detecting threats and managing physiological arousal. These systems are part of the autonomic nervous system, which regulates involuntary bodily functions, including heart rate, respiration, and hormonal release. A stressor encounter immediately triggers physiological changes, including increased heart rate, pupil dilation, and shifts in blood flow. These changes reflect the body's effort to mobilize energy and prepare for action, often described as the fight or flight response. Affective primary appraisal. This initial reaction constitutes what Stefan and Anderson refer to as the affective primary appraisal. It is a rapid, non-conscious, embodied assessment of whether the stimulus aligns or misaligns with the body's sense of safety, regulation, and coherence. This appraisal does not involve verbal thought or reflection. Instead, it manifests as a shift in core affect, a neurophysiological state that underlies all emotional experience. Core affect changes can include feelings of unease, tightness in the chest, gut tension, or a sense of vitality and readiness. Importantly, these affective responses shape perception before cognition can interpret them. The world appears dangerous or benign, overwhelming or manageable, depending on how the body is attuned at that moment. For instance, if a person sees a facial expression that is ambiguous, the meaning they assign to it will depend on their affective state. If they are already anxious, meaning their body is in a state of high arousal with elevated cortisol levels, they are more likely to interpret the expression as threatening. This is not because they reasoned their way into fear, but because their body prefigured the perception. Affective primary appraisal is thus the body's first pass evaluation of environmental conditions, serving as the gatekeeper for all further cognitive activity. Cognitive secondary appraisal. Only after this initial affective shift does the cognitive secondary appraisal occur. This stage involves more deliberate, conscious processing. It involves evaluating the available resources, identifying potential strategies, and predicting likely outcomes. Secondary appraisal draws on past experience, stored knowledge, and problem-solving capacity. It is often guided by the prefrontal cortical regions of the brain, which are responsible for executive function. However, this cognitive work does not start from scratch. It interprets and contextualizes the affective signal already in place. In other words, cognition operates within the emotional frame established by primary affect. If the body has already determined that the situation is threatening, cognition is more likely to search for danger and amplify that perception, a process known as affect-biased information processing. Furthermore, if a person has access to strong internal resources, such as self-efficacy, resilience, or emotion regulation skills, or external resources, such as social support, the cognitive appraisal will likely modify the initial emotional reaction. This dynamic interplay between emotion and thought underscores the importance of not viewing cognition as a corrective to emotion, but as its partner in adaptive function. Coping response. The final stage in the model is the coping response, the behavioral and psychological strategies the individual employs to regulate the demands of the situation. This response is not simply the product of cognition. It reflects the integration of affective and cognitive signals. The type of coping strategy adopted, whether avoidance, confrontation, problem solving, or emotional expression, will be influenced by both the initial core affect and the individual's cognitive evaluation of resources and outcomes. Effective coping, thus, depends not only on thinking clearly, but on accurately sensing and interpreting the body's initial affective messages. This revised sequence, starting with embodied emotion, moving to reflective thought, and culminating in action, fundamentally shifts our understanding of stress. It suggests that successful adaptation begins with tuning into the body's initial affective response rather than bypassing it in favor of rational control. This has implications for everything from psychotherapy to education, highlighting the importance of cultivating affective awareness and somatic intelligence as foundations for resilience. Moreover, this model restores the primacy of the body in psychological life. It acknowledges that we are not abstract minds riding in passive bodies, but dynamic organisms whose survival depends on the ability to sense, interpret, and act on physiological cues. Stress is not simply a cognitive judgment. It is a whole-body experience. And coping is not just a matter of what we think. It is a matter of how well we can integrate what we feel with what we know. Core affective attunement model. At the heart of the revised transactional framework is a hierarchical structure termed the core affective attunement model, which organizes the stress response into 5 interrelated levels. This model illustrates how humans continuously evaluate their internal physiological states in relation to the challenges posed by the external environment. Rather than being a linear, stepwise process, these levels operate dynamically and interactively. Each layer informs and modulates the others in a feedback system grounded in neurophysiological functioning. The term attunement in this context refers to the ongoing synchronization between the brain and body and environmental cues and bodily states, which guide perception, action, and coping strategies. Attunement is not passive reception, but active sensing, effectively coloring how one perceives what is happening. Core affective attunement. At the base of the model is core affective attunement itself, which refers to the moment-to-moment bodily sensing of whether one is regulated or dysregulated in the face of shifting internal and external demands. This evaluation is grounded in interoception, the process by which the nervous system monitors internal bodily states, including heart rate, breathing, muscle tension, and gastrointestinal activity. Interoception is mediated by structures such as the insular cortex and anterior cingulate cortex, which integrate visceral signals and contribute to the emotional experience. When interoception signals that the body is well-regulated, breathing is smooth, muscles are relaxed, heart rate is steady, core affective attunement registers safety. When interoception detects dysregulation such as shallow breathing, increased heart rate, or gastrointestinal distress, core affect signals threat or uncertainty, even in the absence of a clear external trigger. Importantly, this attunement is pre-reflective. It happens before conscious thought and shapes what we can think about, attend to, and feel motivated to do. In this sense, core affective attunement functions as the foundation of all subsequent appraisal and coping. It determines whether the world feels navigable or overwhelming, whether people feel approachable or dangerous, and whether our internal capacity feels adequate or insufficient. Perceived reserve capacity. The next level of the model involves perceived reserve capacity, which refers to an individual's subjective sense of the resources available to handle challenges. This includes both internal resources such as resilience, optimism, and self-regulation skills, and external resources, including financial stability, access to healthcare, and social support. The term reserve evokes a physiological analogy. Just as an athlete needs glycogen reserves to perform well under physical demand, people need effective and cognitive reserves to cope well with psychological demands. These reserves buffer the impact of stressors and modulate the intensity of effective responses. When a person perceives that they have sufficient reserves, core affective attunement is more likely to remain positive or stable even in the face of difficulty. When reserve capacity feels depleted, the same situation may provoke panic, hopelessness, or collapse. Notably, perceived reserve capacity is not always aligned with actual capacity. Some individuals may have robust external resources but lack confidence in using them, while others may feel resourceful despite external scarcity. This discrepancy underscores the significance of perception in shaping stress responses and the role of therapeutic interventions in reorienting resource beliefs. Perceived environmental demands. Layer 3 of the model addresses perceived environmental demands, which encompass the threats, challenges, or uncertainties that a person believes they must manage. These can range from concrete physical demands, such as a tight deadline or a medical emergency, to abstract psychological challenges like social evaluation or identity threat. Crucially, it is the perception of these demands that triggers the stress response, not necessarily their objective intensity. For example, two individuals facing the same financial difficulty may react very differently depending on their core affect, interoceptive tone, and appraisal of their resources. These environmental demands are processed through multiple sensory modalities: visual, auditory, tactile, and filtered through both conscious and unconscious appraisal systems. The amygdala and prefrontal cortex play complementary roles in this process. The amygdala detects threat-related stimuli and initiates autonomic responses, while the prefrontal cortex attempts to modulate or contextualize the perception of threat. If core affect is dysregulated and reserve capacity feels low, environmental demands are more likely to be appraised as overwhelming, leading to maladaptive coping strategies like avoidance, aggression, or withdrawal. Predictive regulation. The fourth level, predictive regulation, refers to the brain and body's ability to anticipate changes in internal or external conditions and make preemptive adjustments to maintain stability. This process is often described in neuroscience as elasticis, meaning stability through change. Elasticis differs from homeostasis in that it emphasizes the body's capacity to anticipate future needs rather than react to deficits. Predictive regulation is influenced by learning, memory, and context sensitivity. It depends heavily on the functioning of the prefrontal cortex, anterior insula, and hippocampus. For example, if a person knows that a social encounter typically provokes anxiety, their body may begin to mount a stress response before the interaction even occurs. The anticipatory shift in affective tone may affect everything from posture and voice to perception and memory retrieval. Predictive regulation allows for the conservation of energy and the strategic mobilization of physiological and behavioral responses. However, when core affect is misattuned, i.e., when the nervous system mispredicts threat in benign context, predictive regulation can become maladaptive, leading to chronic stress activation or overavoidance. Adaptive response. The final level of the model is the adaptive response, which comprises the strategies and actions taken to meet environmental demands while maintaining or restoring internal balance. These responses include cognitive coping strategies, e.g., reframing, problem solving, behavioral responses, e.g., setting boundaries, seeking support, and physiological regulation techniques, e.g., slowing the breath, grounding. Importantly, an adaptive response is not simply a matter of doing the right thing. It is defined by whether the action leads to improved core effective attunement. For instance, a person may engage in avoidance because it temporarily reduces distress. However, if it leads to long-term dysregulation and isolation, it is not adaptive. Conversely, assertively asking for help or taking a break from overstimulation may restore a sense of bodily regulation and agency, qualifying as adaptive even if it does not resolve the external stressor. The effectiveness of any coping strategy depends on its alignment with the individual's core effect, reserve capacity, and real-time perception of environmental demands. In summary, the core effective attunement model illustrates that stress is not simply a matter of cognitive appraisal, but a multi-layered process grounded in bodily sensation, perceptual filtering, and resource evaluation. It provides a framework for understanding how people transition from embodied sensing to adaptive action, and it offers clinicians a more nuanced lens through which to comprehend and support the unfolding of coping in real time. What is the impact? The revised transactional model of stress and coping, which centers on effective attunement, invites a comprehensive reevaluation of how physiological, psychological, social, and material factors contribute to resilience or vulnerability under stress. Each domain exerts its influence by shaping the body's ongoing evaluation of safety and threat, sufficiency and insufficiency. Importantly, these domains do not operate independently. They interact dynamically, influencing the tone and trajectory of core effective appraisal. This section examines how each of the four domains, physiological, psychological, social, and material, directly influences the body's ability to perceive and respond to stressors. Physiological impact. Physiological states are foundational to the experience and regulation of stress. Physiology refers to the functioning of the body's systems, including the nervous, endocrine, immune, and cardiovascular systems. These systems are in constant communication with the brain, creating a feedback loop that links bodily states to perception and action. When physiological systems are well regulated, meaning that sleep is restful, nutrition is adequate, and physical activity is balanced, the autonomic nervous system is more likely to maintain homeostasis, or internal stability. In such conditions, the parasympathetic branch of the autonomic nervous system, particularly mediated by the vagus nerve, promotes rest, digestion, and effective calm. This state of physiological regulation is associated with positive core effect and increased capacity for flexible response to environmental demands. Conversely, when physiological conditions are suboptimal due to chronic sleep deprivation, poor diet, or sedentary behavior, the sympathetic nervous system remains overactivated. This chronic arousal results in elevated cortisol levels, inflammation, and increased sensitivity to perceived threats. In this state, the body becomes predisposed to perceive ambiguous stimuli as threatening, thereby triggering dysregulated affective responses. Poor physiological tone also impairs predictive regulation, making it more difficult for individuals to anticipate and prepare for future challenges. Thus, physiology does not merely support stress resilience. It is a primary determinant of the affective tone that underlies stress appraisal. Psychological impact. The psychological domain encompasses an individual's mental and emotional resources, including self-concept, motivation, cognitive flexibility, emotion regulation skills, and the ability to learn from experience. One's psychological resources shape both the perceived reserve capacity and the strategies chosen in response to stress. A person with high self-efficacy, the belief in their ability to manage challenges, is more likely to interpret a difficult situation as manageable and to remain behaviorally engaged. This belief modulates core effect, reducing anticipatory anxiety and increasing openness to adaptive coping. Another powerful psychological tool is behavioral activation, which involves the intentional use of behaviors to improve mood and regulate physiological responses. For example, engaging in physical activity, spending time in nature, or completing meaningful tasks can rapidly enhance affective tone by increasing dopamine and endorphin activity, as well as improving interoceptive feedback. In contrast to traditional cognitive reappraisal strategies, which depend on verbal reasoning and executive function, behavioral activation works from the bottom up. It improves the bodily substrates of emotion, thereby shifting the affective frame in which cognition operates. This supports the model's claim that affective regulation precedes and enables cognitive clarity. Emotional intelligence, or the ability to recognize and manage one's emotions and those of others, is another crucial psychological resource. High emotional intelligence enhances interoceptive accuracy and facilitates more nuanced affective appraisals, making it easier to distinguish between genuine threat and benign ambiguity. Thus, psychological factors determine not only how we interpret challenges, but also how we feel them in the body. Social impact. Human beings are inherently social organisms, and social connection is a biological imperative. From birth, our nervous systems are shaped by interpersonal contact. Attachment theory, polyvagal theory, and social baseline theory all underscore the importance of co-regulation, the process by which emotional and physiological states are regulated through interactions with others. The presence of supportive others reduces the perceived magnitude of threats and increases perceived reserve capacity, thereby improving effective attunement. Social connection works through both physiological and psychological mechanisms. At a physiological level, safe and supportive social contact activates the parasympathetic nervous system and downregulates the stress response. Oxytocin release during positive social interactions promotes trust and reduces amygdala reactivity. At a psychological level, social support reinforces self-worth, encourages perspective-taking, and provides access to alternative coping strategies. Conversely, social isolation, rejection, or conflict act as stressors themselves, producing dysregulated core effect and impairing cognitive flexibility. Importantly, it is not merely the presence of others that matters, but the quality of the interaction. High conflict or emotionally unavailable relationships can worsen core effect and contribute to chronic dysregulation. Therefore, strengthening social bonds is not just a matter of increasing the quantity of contact, but also of improving the emotional safety and attunement within relationships. Material impact. The final domain, material support, refers to tangible resources, including income, housing, food security, healthcare access, and transportation. These are often overlooked in models of psychological stress, yet they exert a powerful influence on core effect and reserve capacity. Material deprivation is experienced not just as a logistical challenge, but as a chronic stressor that continuously signals a threat to the nervous system. For example, financial instability activates the same neural circuits as physical threat, including the amygdala and hypothalamus. The body interprets uncertainty about housing or food as a threat to survival, increasing vigilance, muscle tension, and cortisol output. These changes degrade core effect, narrowing cognitive focus, and reducing perceived options. Individuals in conditions of material scarcity are more likely to experience chronic dysregulation, impaired predictive regulation, and reactive rather than adaptive coping. Conversely, reliable access to resources enables the body to maintain a state of safety and predictability. This physiological regulation supports more complex cognition, wider attentional scope, and increased behavioral flexibility. Thus, the material domain is not peripheral to stress, it is fundamental. Interventions aimed at improving stress resilience must consider both economic and structural variables, as well as psychological and interpersonal factors. Synthesis. The impact of stress is not determined solely by the external event, but by the state of the body as it encounters that event. Physiological health, psychological resources, social connection, and material security co-determine the effective tone in which life is experienced. They shape the nervous system's appraisal of whether the world is navigable or threatening, and whether one can meet life's demands. Recognizing the impact of these domains highlights a core principle of the revised model. Stress and coping cannot be understood solely as internal psychological processes. They are embodied, relational, and structural phenomena. This broader frame allows for more precise, compassionate, and effective interventions across clinical, educational, and policy contexts. Implications for therapy. The revised transactional model of stress and coping, with its emphasis on affective primacy, interoceptive sensing, and embodied attunement, carries profound implications for therapeutic practice. It challenges the long-standing tendency in cognitive behavioral paradigms to treat emotion as a byproduct of thought, instead placing affective regulation at the heart of adaptive function. If effective primary appraisal drives perception, meaning-making, and action, then therapy must begin not with correcting beliefs, but with modulating the body's state. This orientation redefines both the goals and techniques of intervention. Affective focus. A central implication is that therapists must begin with affect regulation rather than cognitive restructuring. Affective focus refers to the deliberate therapeutic attention given to helping clients sense, tolerate, and modify their internal bodily and emotional states. Instead of asking clients to analyze or reframe their thoughts as a first step, therapists grounded in this model guide clients to identify the felt sense of their current state. This might involve tracking muscle tension, breath rhythm, heart rate awareness, or diffuse sensations such as tightness, warmth, or agitation. This approach draws from interoception-focused modalities, including somatic experiencing, sensorimotor psychotherapy, and emotion-focused therapy. These methods are rooted in the insight that changes in cognition are often difficult, if not impossible, when the nervous system is in a dysregulated state. For example, a client in sympathetic overarousal, characterized by anxiety, agitation, and shallow breathing, will struggle to access insight or perspective. Only by helping the body return to a regulated state via grounding, paced breathing, or co-regulation can reflective thought become available. This prioritizes emotion not merely as a symptom to be managed, but as a signal and starting point for healing. Behavioral activation. Another key strategy supported by the revised model is behavioral activation, which refers to the intentional use of behavior to improve emotional tone and physiological stability. Unlike cognitively driven methods that ask clients to challenge irrational thoughts, behavioral activation begins by encouraging clients to engage in meaningful, structure-building activities, even when motivation is low. These activities might include physical exercise, time in nature, structured routines, or goal-directed tasks. The therapeutic rationale is physiological. Activity changes interoceptive input. Movement alters proprioception and vestibular feedback. Engagement increases dopamine and endogenous opioids. Successful task completion fosters positive core effect through autonomic recalibration. These bottom-up interventions enhance core effective attunement and create the necessary conditions for more accurate cognitive appraisal. Therapists, therefore, help clients understand that action precedes clarity, not the other way around. This reframing is especially valuable for clients with depression, trauma-related disorders, or chronic anxiety, in whom affective dysregulation impairs executive functioning. Social connection. A third therapeutic emphasis is strengthening interpersonal bonds to enhance affective safety. Humans are neurobiologically wired for co-regulation. The presence of a calm, attuned, empathic other can downregulate autonomic threat responses through pathways involving the prefrontal cortex and vagus nerve. Therapy itself is a site of social co-regulation. The therapist's tone of voice, facial expression, and body posture are not incidental, they are interventions. A client who has been chronically dysregulated by relational trauma may first need to experience consistent, low-intensity, attuned interaction before they can benefit from interpretive insight. Beyond the therapy room, helping clients cultivate genuine social support in the real world is essential. This may involve exploring trust, setting boundaries, assertiveness, and effective communication skills. Therapists may also assist clients in identifying isolating patterns, internalized shame, or attachment wounds that interfere with secure connection. The goal is not merely to increase social contact, but to foster relationships that actively support emotional regulation. Environmental support. Ultimately, the model highlights the importance of considering material and structural factors that influence stress. Many therapy models focus exclusively on intrapsychic processes, neglecting how environmental instability such as housing insecurity, poverty, food scarcity, or systemic discrimination creates chronic dysregulation at the physiological level. When the nervous system perceives the environment as unsafe, core effect is biased toward hypervigilance or hopelessness, regardless of attempts at cognitive reframing. Therapists working within this model advocate for resource connection as a clinical priority. This may involve referrals to housing support, legal aid, employment services, medical care, or financial planning. Such advocacy is not ancillary to psychological work, it is integral. Environmental resources shape the nervous system's prediction models. By stabilizing external conditions, therapists help create the physiological conditions for clients to perceive possibility, agency, and coherence. In this light, the therapist's role shifts from interpreter to regulator, from thought corrector to state facilitator, from individual technician to systems-aware ally. Therapists become stewards of effective safety, not only within the therapy hour, but across the ecological field of the client's life. Summary: this model encourages therapists to think and work differently. It asks, how is this client's nervous system interpreting safety or threat, regardless of the rational story? How can we shift that state, not through argument, but through posture, pacing, movement, contact, and tangible support? When clients experience regulation at the level of effect, the mind naturally becomes more flexible. Change, insight, and coping follow, not as forced outcomes, but as emergent properties of a body that feels safe enough to imagine new responses.